All right, guys, we welcome to Below the Belt Show. Actor extraordinaire whose career spans decades. I mean, this guy's been working since the 90s on some of your favorite television shows. And he was just recently on my favorite series, one of my favorite series on Netflix, Stranger Things Season 2. Guys, it's actor James Dumont on the line. What's up, James?
What's going on?
Hey, good to have you on Below the Belt Show. You're talking to Al Soto as well as Mike the General Zod and Sabrina Taylor Smith in studio.
All right, I got all three of y'all.
Yeah.
So, first of all, like I said, James, I mean, you are quite the career actor, being in the business for so many years. So, first of all, congratulations on your success. I mean, you've appeared on which seems like maybe every major television show since the 90s.
I'd like to think that's the case. I mean, I go through these ebbs and flows where it kind of goes back and forth between, get some movie traction and then all of a sudden some TV things happen. So it's I straddle between these two worlds. It's been pretty good for me in that regard because I think, sometimes some actors are just, well, that's the guy, he does that, he's on that show, and that's all he's going to do, and that's great. So it's, but I've been able to kind of straddle both of those worlds pretty well in terms of, getting some really nice juicy roles in some bigger movies and then, and get some nice guest spots on TV. So, it's been good. Stranger Things is one of those things where it was so funny because I was like, I was all excited because I did, 6 of the 8 episodes of Law & Order Menendez Murders, Dick Wolf and Law & Order and big NBC, and I'm all excited, and Edie Falco, and I'm like, this is going to be great, so many things excited about, man, but I do one episode of Stranger Things, like, I watch my Twitter and everything, Instagram, kind of go through the world, I'm like, wait a minute, one episode.
Does that mean more people watch Stranger Things than the Menendez brothers?
Oh my God, the cult part of it was, I was like, oh, so much for NBC, all that excitement, but it was very funny because here I am doing the big mini series and all these people behind it, but it's like, once Netflix had dropped all the episodes, put the episodes up online, it was just like, I just watched all this kind of traction happen real quick, and I'm like, oh man, people fall over. So it's really fantastic, and season 3 starts up, they're starting up in Atlanta, and can't say anything about anything because I don't know anything, so there's that. Well, I don't have to kill you to tell you anything, but I do know that they're starting season 3. I know it's shooting in Atlanta.
Yes.
And that's all that the public, needs to know.
Well, to remind our audience about your character, you play a creepy middle-aged man. I guess your IMDb didn't really have a character name.
That must be so gratifying to say that. Yeah, I play a creepy middle-aged man.
Exactly. That's and it happens sometimes. Creepy middle-aged man just in my everyday life. So get paid and compensate for that. I go to my daughter's school recital and I'm excited about seeing this particular artist or this painter or this performer, and they're like, you're just kind of creepy middle-aged guy. And I'm like, wait, there's work for that. That's my life.
So your character goes from bringing Natalia Dyer and Charlie Heaton's characters from that park to the police station to be interrogated,
the station,
right?
The lab.
The lab. Right, the lab. Thank you.
So I'm Paul Reiser's hench. Is kind of like what Sean Levy and I were talking about, kind of, the character and things like that. You're the muscle. You're the medical research muscle. I'm like, that's an odd one. You and the guy that looks like Inspector Gadget. I'm like, you guys got a good, he's got the long face and the trench coat and the whole thing kind of going on. So it was pretty fun. Now they're moved on. They're gone at season 3 right now, and so the last thing I just did a thing on Timeless on NBC, which I really hope gets renewed.
Yes.
I did a nice big guest spot on there where I played Marty Balaban, who was the president of Paramount Pictures. And the fun part about that is that the actor Bob Balaban who's mostly known for the Christopher Guest movies and, you know, well, tons of other stuff. But Bob Balaban, that's his great-uncle. And his great-uncle headed up, if you go to Paramount Studios, there's an actual Balaban building because his great-uncle was a kind of a crucial player in keeping Paramount alive. They had a, took a really heavy hit after the fall in the stock market in the 20s. And so he really kind of, you know, really rebuilt Paramount, you know, in the 40s and 50s. And I think he was even up there up to the 60s. So he was one of the kind of like the iconic kind of guys at Paramount. And so, I get this great opportunity to do a historical character, which I'm mostly doing films. So that was kind of fun. But I got to have a long conversation with Bob Balaban about his uncle and got information from him and found out all kinds of interesting things that I didn't know about his family, and because I'm originally from Chicago, and so a lot of the great movie theaters in Chicago, like the Chicago Theater, was built by the Balaban brothers, which were his uncles. So he's from a great dynasty of movie theater moguls, because at that point in time, the studios owned certain theaters, but not families didn't own the theaters, but the Balaban brothers, they had the whole Midwest locked up. So if you wanted a movie, you had to negotiate with those guys. So it was pretty fun.
I never realized the Bob Balaban was from such a dynasty. I never really thought that.
I connected the dots a little bit, and then a friend of mine is Jennifer Coolidge, who people
from American Pie.
Stifler's mom.
Exactly.
And Two Broke Girls, yes.
So she and I are good friends, and she knows
Love her.
She's worked on the Christopher Guest stuff. Yeah, she lives in New Orleans here with me. We live in New Orleans. There's a few of us actors that are down here still. Goodman still has a place here, and Harry Shearer, and a whole ton of other, Tim Reed, a whole bunch of other folks live here. But and then more recently, Linda Hamilton moved down to New Orleans. So I see her a good deal. She and I are friends. We've been on a couple of flights. But so Jennifer Coolidge and I know each other very well. And so she was able to connect me with Bob, and so I was able to kind of pick his brain a little bit. So that was kind of fun. You know, it just doesn't always happen where you can kind of get a – and he told me wonderful stories that were not on Wikipedia. But, you know, so
yeah.
I like to do a little bit of research on characters, and that helps a great deal.
Totally. So what's the latest on Timeless? You mentioned – so I know that they were struggling with the season two.
You know, they're on the button. You know what I mean? And, like, it's the fans kept them on the air the first season, and it seems like, you know, it's kind of building some traction. You know, I think they're in a tough little time slot. I think that, you know, they got such great following, though. You got amazing people like Eric Kripke, who's a creator, you know, did Supernatural, and you got Sean Ryan, who did The Shield. I mean, it's just such a And the cast is amazing. The writing is fantastic. So,
James, as you know there's been a couple shows that have been on the brink of being cut out, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but another network could pull them up. So we'll just have to wait and see, I guess. But again, Timeless, a great show if you haven't seen it. If you like those time travel type of films.
Really, if you like time travel. I mean, it's so well done, and the writers really do a great deal of take a lot of time and energy doing research, and I think the fans who are kind of people who are really kind of like into like cosplay and people who are into like steampunk, you know, they're able to kind of move through this time travel, and I think they're really onto something. I think the hard part is with the network shows, there's just so many writers and producers, and the cost of doing per episode just becomes very expensive. So there's that.
Okay.
But I enjoyed being on the show. It was fantastic. The cast is amazing. Nice. There's a couple people that are on Preacher, which is a show that shoots in New Orleans.
Preacher, from AMC, based on the graphic novel?
Yeah, love that. Yeah, they just wrapped their third season here in New Orleans. So I got a feeling they're going to move to another state after this, but we'll see.
What can you say about your role in Preacher?
I'm not in Preacher. But one of the characters from Timeless is also a series regular on Preacher.
Oh, okay, okay.
that was the tie-in.
But oh, okay, gotcha.
They've called and circled around me a few times, but we haven't quite locked it in yet. So
well, I'm sure they will soon, my man.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Jurassic World. I mean, working with Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, and of course being directed by Colin Trevorrow. If I recall, your character met its demise, yes?
Yes. I had to be the corporate sponsor in there, and although everybody thinks I'm the fat guy with the sandwich, but that's, you know, that's what everybody thinks me of, like a fat guy with a sandwich. But, so I'm going to go to the premiere on the 12th, I think.
The next Jurassic World. Yes.
Yeah, so Jurassic World 2 is happening, and I'm going to go to that. And then Colin Trevorrow is going to direct Jurassic World 3.
Oh, so, that's exciting news. Wait a minute.
We'll see if something happens there.
If you're going to be at the premiere of the next Jurassic World movie, are you hinting at something, at perhaps your character?
I would not hint at anything these days.
due to NDAs.
One would say that when you're in Jurassic World 1 and you're not in Jurassic World 2, which I'm not, it's just a nice courtesy to invite you to the premiere.
Nice.
So, how about that?
There you go. That makes sense.
But, it's never a bad thing to kind of stay connected. I mean, everybody's really kind of in that group of folks. Laura Dern and I are friends. Years ago, we were together at a movie called When the Game Stands Tall, and we were on a flight back together from the Netherlands to L.A. And at that point in time, I already knew that I was in Jurassic World. So we sat on the plane and talked to her. She goes, Jurassic, the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes, definitely. Because,
rebooted it. They put it back in the movie theaters. I mean, Jesus, that was a lovely gift that still just keeps on keeping on.
Keeps on keeping on for sure. How was your experience working on Patriots Day with Mark Wahlberg? And, of course, tackling a subject matter so serious.
Amazing, amazing. And that's, I came off of working on Deepwater Horizon, where I had a huge role as the VP, executive of VP, the vice president, actually. And it established a really great rapport with Pete Berg and I and then Mark. And they said, look, man, we want you to, we got something for you for the next one. And I was like, oh, cool, it's great. And, they flew me up to Boston, and they put me up in this beautiful, five-star hotel. And
very
I got,
nice.
On my floor is, Kevin Bacon and Goodman and J.K. Simmons. And I'm like, wow, this is fantastic. I'm there for a couple of weeks, But literally the most important, powerful thing was right outside my window of my hotel was where the second bomb had gone off. So I had done all this research and stuff, and I did all the background and everything, and so it was really kind of intense to kind of just look out my hotel window. It's like that's where the second bomb went off. The other experience I had is that Pete had asked me to go to talk to. We went to the Boston Garden. So Michael Beach, who played the governor, and I played the Massachusetts Emergency Management Director. Who's a real guy, actually met the real dude. And so Pete couldn't go to this one event that was happening at the Boston Garden. And so we were up in the suite, and it's right in the middle of the basket. We're watching. And as I'm getting up there, I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. I'm so excited to be invited to this thing. And they pulled me aside and said, hey, look, these are the families and some of the survivors of the Boston bombing. So I am getting excited about going to, being in the garden and seeing this, all the trophies and everything, but they were like, hey, James, this is a business, just temper your excitement for a second.
Right.
But the important thing is that, I just came off Deepwater Horizon, where I met the families of, the 11 people that, had died in the explosion. And so, the fun part for me was kind of just explaining to the folks, look, I know you've gone through this in, incredible, terrible thing. And, but we're not going to be exploiting your pain. I mean, Pete and Mark, Mark is not going to do this movie, wrong. So, it was really nice to kind of be an emissary for, we just watched this and, just came off Deepwater Horizon where everybody's like, oh my God, they're going to make millions of dollars off of our pain and our loss. And it's like, no, they did an honor and tribute to those 11, those who perished. And I knew when we were going into Boston and Pete taking on that and Mark being from Boston and taking on that subject matter, mm-hmm. that they were going to do it right. And to me, Deepwater is a very, very well done movie, but I think Patriots Day is even stronger. And what I didn't know at the time or I found out after the fact, is when we were doing Deepwater Horizon, I overheard Mark, he invited me over, and he talked about how, you know, when they did Lone Survivor, Pete and Mark and him said, look, we want to make movies about real human beings that are put on under very heavy, stressful situations, and their intent, and you know, their humanity kind of comes out, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and so, you know, it's really a trilogy. It's like, you know, if you look at Lone Survivor's the first one, Deepwater Horizon, and Patriot's Day, it's a really a trilogy of making stories about regular human beings that are put in very extraordinary circumstances and situations, of which they make whatever decisions based on what they know, where they're at. And I just thought that, you know, those are really interesting and profound kind of movies to make, you know, is you know, normal folks under really heavy, you know, stressful situations. Because even in BP, the guy, you know, had an opportunity to detach from the oil well that was down there. He had an opportunity to detach so it wouldn't end up having to be the biggest environmental disaster. But he felt, you know, it was above his pay grade to be able to make that kind of decision. And that led to, you know, millions of gallons of oil spilling into the Gulf. And so, you know, for all your training and all your expertise, when, you know, when a human being's put under a really heavy, stressful situation, you know, it brings out the best in us, and sometimes it brings out the worst.
Right.
You know, and then the other side to it is that, you know, and honestly, that kind of explosion, that kind of heat, there should have been 11 people left, you know, not 11 people dead. Wow. But there were so many people that went back in, and all the years of training, you know, many, many people were, you know, heroes and going back and saving their fellow man and, you know, burning, have limbs burned and, you know, went through all kinds of things. So it's amazing that, you know, these, to make movies about people who are really, you know, put in very tough situations.
Real life heroes, not your Marvel heroes.
Yeah, real life heroes.
Not your Marvel DC heroes, but your real life heroes, yes.
Absolutely. And I think that's another, I remember Pete in one of his speeches when we were, you know, first screening the movie Patriot's Day, he's like, look, man, instead of doing all these comic book characters, you know, there's real life everyday heroes in amongst us. And very seldom do we give an opportunity. And same thing happened with you know, Patriot's Day, is that, you know, it was the Boston PD and the decision to close that city down. Those guys had a trunk full of bombs. Mm-hmm. They were going to go into Manhattan. So they could have done so much more damage, but it's the, you know, camaraderie in the city of Boston, and the people really got together, and they never left town, you know. So I just think that, you know, those are kind of, you know, it's really, I'm proud to be part of those kind of movies, you know. And the next one they got coming up is Mile 22, and I couldn't do that scheduling-wise. So hopefully I'll be working on the next one with those guys, because they're just amazing, amazing filmmakers and actors to work with.
It's Mark Wahlberg and two of them. So yeah, heck yeah.
You were saying before about how like you tend to straddle the two worlds between movies and TV. But from listening to you, it seems like you find it a lot more gratifying to work in movies. Like, is there one that you prefer more than the other?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I've said this before, and it's always kind of a joke, but it's true. I mean, network TV, the money is fantastic. It just provides me, you know, and my family with all the insurance that I, you know, need. So it's like, you kind of need to do network TV out of necessity, you know? But, and also, you know, network TV is, you know, the highest paid stuff. But because now, you know, unfortunately, the Hulu and the Netflix and even Facebook, you know, they don't have residuals on the back end. So you don't get it in the front, you don't get it on the back.
You don't? So like,
so it's not good for the for the working class, middle class actor. It's actually death to our business. But it's great. It's great life for those who are on the receiving end, because you can pick and choose whatever you want.
Hey, James. Talk to Gabrielle Carteris about that, the president of the Screen Actors Guild.
you know, she's a figurehead, and this problem was before her. In all honesty, the new media contract is not new media; it's a joke. When you're paying actors $125 a day, when you're paying extras $150 a day to work on a network television show, there's a problem.
There's a disparage,
You know, but the real for me, I really prefer film because for me, like TV, I just finished doing a huge TV show. It hasn't aired yet, so I can't kind of talk about it. But I just did a very huge television show in New York, so I'll just leave it at that. Network show that everybody loves, but this experience was a little bit different. Usually, I have experiences like I did with Timeless, which is every time I do a guest spot on a TV show, I feel like I've been invited to the most plentiful, amazing Thanksgiving dinner. Like the company is great. The food is great, you know, and oh my God, and I'm satisfied, and it's always amazing, right? And then they go, hey, have a nice night, time for you to go home. And I'm like, what do you mean? Oh no, you're done with Thanksgiving dinner. Tomorrow we have a new episode and a new director, and we're gonna eat again. What's this for Thanksgiving? But your visit is gone. So there's the door. Hope you had a great meal, and we're gonna have another one like next week. And I'm just like, you know, creatively and artistically, and as somebody, you know, like I feel starving that way. I don't have that experience on film. When I'm on films, I feel like a film is like a painting. That there's so many different colors, and there's so many different textures, and that you need every single thing that's on that frame or on that canvas to make that picture possible, literally. So it's like, because also in movies, it's like with television shows, like some characters can kind of come and go, but wait a minute, for a movie, you have 120 pages or 90 pages or 120 minutes or sometimes 3 hours, oh my God, but you only have this limited amount of time to tell the story.
Right.
So every single person that's in the movie, small, big part, doesn't matter, you know, you need them. They're all kind of crucial, in my opinion.
More crucial than someone on a television series, like a day
player
television. That's
what I think, because I think the nature of television is you need these people you need, like, dated each episode.
I can see
what
you're saying, yeah.
But then other people can kind of come and go. But for a movie, you pretty much need everybody. So as much as I know that actors feel, it's just too lonely, for a movie, the writer has only chosen certain characters. Now, unfortunately, they haven't given your character a name. You're cop number one, you're intern, you're lawyer. So exactly, the writer didn't think that much about your character. So I stay away from characters that are like their job description, you know, lawyer, intern, you know, cop. The writer didn't take the time to like give your character a
name.
Either a first name or a last name.
Right.
It doesn't really matter. But the truth is, the writer's only picked a certain amount of, you can only have a certain amount of characters appear in a movie. But they're all for very good reason. They all have importance and value.
I think it's a little
more expendable when it comes to television because next week you got another episode. So it's like, you know, take them, leave them, have them, don't have them. You know,
unless you're a series regular, that's the only exception.
Yeah, unless you're a series regular, it's like everybody else is kind of expendable.
Yeah,
and you know, the hard part for me is I'm a working character actor, but. You know, I lose a lot of roles to names or guys that are a little bit further up on the food chain. Guys that are a little more recognizable. So there's, you know, and then, you know, the people die off.
So, James, is there a favorite co-star or guest star television role in, let's say, the 90s, for instance? Of course, you've done General Hospital, you've done Lois and Clark, NYPD Blue.
One of my favorites was House. I did an episode of House.
House, yes.
Where the guy had sympathetic pregnancy. He was wifeless pregnant. And so when she started gaining weight, he started having, it's proven that there is some sort of sympathetic pregnancy that a man can go through. But this guy, I had prosthetic breasts built.
Oh my God.
I remember that.
You remember that?
They were getting larger. And so to me, that was one of my favorite episodes. And that episode also just like got all kinds of crazy stuff in it too, where like the lead character was the A storyline was a model who was having sex with her dad, but she was born a he or has both parts, so she's a hermaphrodite. So how types of things? So like, I don't know, are you cheating on your daughter or your son or a little bit of both because you got both parts? I mean, that episode was just like, they thought, we did the table read and, you know, Garrett had written and he's like, yeah, I don't think this is ever going to, they let this get on the air. This is way too far, you know? And then we got a guy that has boobs and, you know, like, you know, so to me, like the guest star stuff, that was one of my favorites of that, was just because, and also I had a full day of having prosthetic breasts built. And then the weird thing of all the crew guys kind of going, come on, show them to me. And I was like, wow, you guys.
They want to see you with your breasts.
Like, wow, this is what it must be like that women have to go through all the goddamn time. And then the creepy part is like.
You almost went Caitlyn Jenner there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or like, you know, Harvey Weinstein. I'm like, hey, you know I'm a guy, right? So why do you want to look at my tits? I mean, this is crazy. And really, really kind of creepy and freaky. You know? Like, it's all weird. It's just too weird for me. But, yeah, and then the fun part is, and the director of that episode is Jim Heyman, who is the executive producer of NCIS New Orleans, and which I did a guest spot on. And another great thing where you're like, I'm the chief of staff to the mayor, and Steven Weber plays the mayor of New Orleans. And you know, the fun part for me is that when you're the bad guy or the killer, you never want to let anybody know it. And my son was watching the whole episode, and it gets all the way to the end, and then finally they're like, "Hey, where'd you get that necklace?" It was like, "Yeah, we need to ask you some questions." And my son's like, "Wait a minute, you did it! You're the killer! Oh my god! You know." So my That's favorite great. Thing on that part was like, my son just never saw it coming. And I was just like, yep, I'm doing pretty good. If I can fool my son, 12 at the time, I was like, if I can fool him and he didn't know at all that I was the guy all alone, gravy.
Nice. James, wow. Unfortunately, we ran out of time. We really enjoyed talking with you. We'd love to have you back in the future to plug your next film or television project. Of course, all your fans could check you out, of course, on demand to check out your episode of Timeless. And, of course, on Netflix, season 2 of Stranger Things.
Season 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yes, you're in episode 4, so check that out. More, I'm sure, which you can't announce yet, but we're looking forward to seeing more of now one of our favorite character actors, James Dumont.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
And before we let you go, James, if you could, let us know who you are, throw out some of your bigger projects, and let us know you're on Below the Belt Show, and then throw out a catchphrase or a plug or whatever you want at the end.
Yes. This is James Dumont, mostly known from Dallas Buyers Club, Water Horizon, Jurassic World, Stranger Things 2, Season 2, and you are listening to Below the Belt. And we're going to be Below the Belt, and that's pretty much how you can find us. Come check us out.
James, that was awesome. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you very much.
You got it. Thanks again, man. Bye-bye. And you guys, let me know when I'm off, and I can give you some info if you want.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Are we off air?
We kind of are live, so unfortunately when we go, we're continuing. But tell
Keep
you what.
Keep going, brothers.
Yes.
Keep on plugging. I'll check you out later.
We'll communicate through Charles. How's that?
Sounds perfect.
All Thanks right. Again. Thanks so much.
Have a good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
What a cool guy, man.
Good interview. He was really interesting. Yeah, and he was...
What a career.
He told some really good stories. I was really into it.
Yeah,
Better than some people who call in. I'll say that.
Yeah, I liked his Thanksgiving and painter analogy.
And also, he seemed a lot more like introspective.
And you remember his character on House, too?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I remember the guy with the breasts. How do you forget people?
Caitlyn Jenner.
How do you forget things like that?
Yeah.